All right. Hey, so we are in our series, Don't Be a Dummy, which if you want to put a positive spin on that, you might say, be wise. We're going back to Proverbs, the book of Proverbs, and I love Proverbs. It's like bite-sized and it's easy for me, right? You know, there's 31 chapters in there. You can read a chapter a day, and I guarantee you're going to get something out of what you read in the book of Proverbs. Like, if you read the Gospels, Jesus is, he's preaching and he's laying it down for people, and you read something in there and you're like, I have no idea what Jesus is talking about. And so you read it again, and then you go back and you read it again, and then you get the commentary, and you read the commentary, and then you call Gary, because Gary's going to know if nobody else knows. But Proverbs isn't like that at all. Proverbs is like, it's these little bite-sized nuggets. It's, you know, it's a father talking to a son, saying, look, and now not just any father, this is, for the most part, it's Solomon, the wisest person who ever lived. And he's talking to his son, and as you read the book of Proverbs, I went through a lot of it this week, getting ready for our sermon, and the beginning of almost every chapter in Proverbs, I don't know if you've ever noticed this before, Solomon's like, he's pleading with this son. If you have teenage sons, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's like, son, if you will please just listen to what I'm trying to tell you, if you will do what I tell you to do, if you'll take my advice, your life is going to go so much better than the path that you're on right now. And he says that at the end of chapter 1 that you're going to avoid so much harm, so much pain, so much regret. Your life is going to be so much easier if you pursue wisdom and you listen to the advice that I'm trying to give you. So the last couple of weeks as we've gone through Proverbs, we've talked a lot about what wise people do. Like last week was so fantastic. Matt did a fantastic job. Like I have kept his sermon in my brain all week. Not that I've necessarily practiced it all week, but I've tried the right word at the right time. Wise people, they measure their words carefully. They're really careful with how they speak to other people. Man, I'm really popping. The right word at the right time, in the right way, in the right tone. That's what wise people do. Now this morning, I'm not going to talk as much about what wise people do. I want to talk a little bit more about how do you become wise in the first place? Because Solomon keeps telling his son over and over again, seek wisdom, find wisdom. There's a lot of different ways to do that, but Solomon is going to give him some specific advice. Now, here's the thing. When poor Stephen, like he's got the job of coordinating all of the sermons and who preaches what. And that's a hard job, I know, because he sends out these emails, at least to me, and I take forever in responding back because it's like, he'll give me a topic or he'll give like a general idea and he's like, do you have anything you want to preach on that? I'm like, not really, actually. Like, I got nothing. And I'm not going to say anything if I got nothing to say. That's just kind of the way I roll. But when he asked if I wanted to say something for Proverbs, I was like, yes, there is like one particular proverb that I really want to spend some time on because it was a big deal to my family, big deal to me. This was like one of the guiding principles that Stacy and I used when we raised our kids. So like parents of young children, maybe you'll especially get something out of this today. I hope so, but hopefully there's plenty here for everybody to share it. If they're like my kids, I don't know how much Bible they could actually tell you, but there are two verses in Scripture that they could tell you, and both of them are in Proverbs, and this one today is one of those. And it's Proverbs chapter 13, verse 20. So if you want to go ahead and turn there, well, I'll have it on the board here in a second. I'm going to talk about what it takes to actually walk wisely, to be a wise person. How do you become wise? And here's the spoiler alert. It has to do with your relationships. It has to do with the people that you hang out with, the people that you surround yourself with. Solomon, in this proverb, this is what's called a couplet, okay? So a lot of proverbs are like this. We've talked about this before. You know, he's really good about, like, trying to drill his point home with you. So he'll tell you what he wants you to know, and then he'll come back and he'll say it again. So there's two different ways of saying the same thing, just in case you missed it the first time. Or sometimes when he tells you a proverb, he'll tell you what he wants you to know, and then he gives you the opposite. so that you can kind of contrast that, and maybe that will help you understand it a little bit more. And this proverb is one of those kind of proverbs. So let's go ahead and just read the first part of this. So you want to know how to be a wise person? It's pretty easy. Hang around with wise people. He says, whoever walks with the wise becomes wise. That's like, there is nothing revelatory about that. Like, you know this. This is common sense. If you have children, you look around at the friends that your kids have, and you're like, that is a bad idea. Let's not encourage that. We need to find, like, we know deep in our hearts that who we hang around with matters. But I want to just point out a couple of things in this really simple passage that we need to think about. First of all, he says, whoever walks with. Now, Barry, at the very beginning of our series, he kind of like had a series within a series, this idea that direction, not intention, determines your destination. Like, you've got to be, like, well, everybody's heading in some direction, right? But if you have a destination that you want to arrive at, you need to be headed in that direction. Solomon would kind of say, okay, what you need to do is, if you want to go in that direction, find somebody wise who's headed that way and just hitch your trailer to that truck. They're already walking there. You find that person, you latch onto them, and you walk with them. And you think about a walk, like when you go out for a walk, not a jog, not a sprint, it's a walk. It's a long time. When Stacy and I go sightseeing, when we go on vacations, especially when we went to Quebec a couple of years ago, we walked our legs off, man. But we got to see everything there was to see. And you're not in a hurry, because if you're in a hurry, you're going to miss stuff. And as you're walking along, you're having a conversation, you're making observations, you're talking about your hopes and your dreams. You're not in a hurry to get anywhere, you're just walking. And when you're trying to grow in wisdom, you want to find those people that you can be in it for the long haul with. Nice and slow, long relationship. It's not somebody you just check in with every now and then. It's somebody that you really try to absorb what they have. Now, you may have heard, I hear this all the time actually, that you are an average of the five people you spend the most time with. Have you ever heard of that? It's this idea that it's the law of averages. If I hang out with the same people all the time, we're going to become knowledgeable about the same things. Because what I know is going to rub off on you. What you value, I'm going to start to value. What, you know, you like for entertainment, well, I'm going to hang out with you and I'm going to do the same thing. We just kind of average each other out after a while. The more you hang out with wise people, the wiser you become. Something that, you know, in Scripture really shows this really well is Jesus, of course, because that's Jesus. Jesus, when he comes on the scene, he picks 12 guys who are nobodies. Like, if you're going to start a movement, if you're going to change the world, if you're going to become a religious leader, you would probably pick the guys who have the most influence, who have the most education, people who already have a following. Not Jesus. Jesus picks nobodies. They're fishermen. These are probably, maybe they're guys that are still teenagers, maybe a little older. They're tax collectors. These are blue-collar workers. And Jesus picks these guys. They follow him everywhere he goes for 3 years. If you read, again, if you go back to the Gospels, it's almost comical sometimes to listen to the way these guys operate and how broken their thinking is, especially Peter, right? We always, poor Peter, he has such a bad reputation. But you know, this is somebody who opens his mouth, the right word at the right time, does not, like, that's nowhere in Peter anywhere, right? But what we see is after 3 years with Jesus, something is very different about these guys. In Acts chapter 4, well, actually in Acts chapter 3, Peter and John are out preaching about Jesus. Like, they've seen something incredible. You got to remember, they have seen a dead man come back to life. Now, after you've seen a dead man come back to life, you can't keep that to yourself. You have to tell other people about what you've seen. And they're out talking about Jesus, and they encounter this guy who's lame. He's a beggar. He can't walk. And everybody knows this guy. He's been there for so long. And they heal the lame man. And they get in trouble for healing the lame man. So they drag Peter and John up in front of the religious leaders because they weren't supposed to heal this guy. And they start questioning Peter and John. Like, how can you do this? Why? Never mind the fact that there was a guy who couldn't walk and now he can walk. Like, I don't know what you do with that. I don't know how you criticize that, but they do. But there's this statement about Peter and John here that is awesome. When they, the religious leaders, saw the courage in Peter and John and realized that they were unschooled, ordinary guys, they were astonished and took note that these men had been with Jesus. If you hang out with wise people, you're going to be a wise person, right? You're going to grow in wisdom. And remember, the reason we want to be wise is to avoid the heartache, the pain, the regret. Now, there's a lot of pain that is involved in life, right, just naturally. But there's a lot of self-inflicted pain as well, isn't there? We want to avoid the self-inflicted stupid pain. At least I do, right? And so that's our goal. Now, I don't want to go on to the next piece yet. But remember, this is an opposite thing. If you hang out with wise people, you're going to be wise. So now he's going to tell us what happens if you hang out with foolish people. So I'm just going to ask you, if you hang out with wise people and become wise, what happens if you hang out with foolish people? What? Wrong. This is weird, all right? Now, actually, the law of averages again would say, if you hang out with foolish people, you'll become foolish. But that's not what Solomon says here. And I wish I could say that I had this revelation by myself. But again, sorry, stole this from somebody else. I heard Andy Stanley say this one time, and I was like, well, of course this is the case. He says, the companion of fools suffers harm. If you want to avoid stupid pain, well, then don't hang around with foolish people. Because if you hang around with foolish people, you're going to get hurt. You're going to suffer for their stupidness, right? You think about YouTube. YouTube is awesome. Because you have this library of millions of videos of people who set themselves on fire, they electrocute themselves, men wax their chests, they get drunk, and they try to jump off of buildings. I mean, that is what YouTube is. Like, it's a library of stupid. Foolish people don't care about themselves. Why do you think they're going to care about you? You are collateral damage when you hang out with stupid people. If you want to avoid unnecessary pain, don't hang out with foolish people. Yes, chances are you're going to become a foolish person as well, but you're also going to get hurt. Now, let me tell you some of the people that I hung out with as a kid, and this will kind of give you an idea of where I'm coming from here. Maybe this is one reason why this is so important to me. Growing up as a teenager, my parents took good care of me, but this was not like a priority for them, like to find wise friends. They were kind of like, you know, we'll just kind of deal with the friends he brings around. So let me tell you about a couple of my friends. I'm not going to tell you their last names in case one day they ever hear this on the internet, all right, and become convicted. Ross and Jim. Now, Jim was my best friend in high school. He was a couple of years older than I was. And Ross was actually his friend, but because he was Jim's friend and Jim was my best friend, we all kind of hung out together. But Ross, man, he was not the sharpest tool in the toolbox. Let's just say it that way, right? And at this particular time in the story, Ross was living in his car because he was one of those guys, his parents couldn't even put up with his foolishness. So they kicked him out of the house. Now, he's probably 17 years old at this point. He doesn't have a job, he doesn't have a house, doesn't have any money, he's living in his car, like he's really in a hole here. But when you live in your car, you need gas to get around. And if you don't have a job and you don't have cash, how do you get gas? You steal it, right? And that was the way, like, we're around October, November at this point, and he's sleeping in his car, and he leaves the car running all night, so he's got to have gas. It's a 72 Plymouth Satellite. I don't know if you have any idea what that looks like, but it was this monster hulking muscle car, and it just slurped gas. So one night, Ross and Jim are going to go cruise around in Bartlett, but Ross has no gas. So before they go anywhere, they have to go get gas. They have to go fill up. So Ross keeps this gas can and this hose in his car all the time, and they're cruising through what I would call old Bartlett now, North Street. Now, if you know anything about Bartlett, I know you guys do, back then especially, this is the early 80s, North Street was like the main suburban thoroughfare through Bartlett. All the cute little one-story ranch-style homes. You were one street over from the high school, you were two streets over from the police station. So like really well-populated, well-lit area. But this is where they're gonna steal gas. So they're cruising down the street in this 72 Satellite, and they see a car parked on the street, and that's their target for the night. And they pull over to the side of the road, grab the gas can, they grab the hose, and they sneak down the street to this car. They open the back of the gas tank, in goes the hose, suck the, not that I have any idea how you're supposed to siphon gas. Never done that before. So they, and into the tank it goes, and they're filling up, and something spooks the guy inside that owns the car. I don't know what it is. Nobody knows what it is at this point. But he comes out and he catches them, and they're, you know, standing out on the street waiting to fill up the, you know, the gas can. And he starts yelling and chases them off down the street, and they run and they jump in the car and they take off. Well, Ross gets a little ways down the street and he realizes, wait a second, I forgot my gas can. I've got to go get my gas can or else I can't get any gas. And Jim says, are you kidding me? Like, we just got caught. He's calling the cops right now. There's no way that we can go back there. And Ross says, I'm going to get my gas can. And he turns around and he starts heading back towards the car. Now, here's their plan. Has anybody ever seen Raising Arizona? Raise your hand if you've seen that movie. Okay, so remember when Nick Cage, he's robbed the convenience store, he's been chased down by the clerk, shot at, whatever, he drops the diapers, and he turns around and he heads down the street, and he's just going to slow down, open the car door, grab the diapers, and keep going. If you haven't seen the movie, it's okay. That was their plan. They're going to slow down. Jim's side of the car, the passenger side, is up against the house where the gas can is. They're just going to slow down, open the door, grab the can, and keep going. And as they slow down just enough to get to this car and grab the can, the guy comes back out of the house. I'm not making this up. 12-gauge shotgun, pump action with slugs. And suburban North Street, he opens fire on their car. And it's just all the way down the side of this car. The car that Ross worshiped. Of course, he stomps on the gas, takes off down the street, and Ross comes out. Now, his car is the worst for wear, but Ross is fine, right? He doesn't get his gas can, but off he goes. Not so for Jim. Because remember, Jim's on the passenger side, and that's what's taking fire. So Jim, when the slug comes through the car door, it explodes, and shrapnel goes everywhere. And it just shreds his arm, which is up against the door at that point. So now what's turned into, you know, what was supposed to be a night out cruising is now a night in the ER. Jim's got to get his arm put back together. And you know, when you go to the ER after a gunshot wound, everybody gets involved in that, right? The police get called, the parents get called, the shooter gets called, it's a mess. Now, I go to school, I wasn't there, this I all got from Jim, but when I met Jim on Monday morning and I see him in a cast with his arm all bandaged up, I'm like, man, what did you do this weekend? I don't want to talk about it. And honestly, it was months before anybody would tell me the true story of what happened that night. Because Jim was so embarrassed and so mad at Ross for what had happened. But what he didn't realize is that when you hang out with foolish people, they don't care about you, man. You're going to get hurt. The companion of fools suffers harm. So this is one reason why it was so important for Stacy and I when we were raising our kids to make sure that we surrounded our kids with wise people. It was so important for us. And we talk about walking wisely. I've got a couple of things I want to say, and a lot of them aren't apparent, so I'm sorry. You don't have to check out if you don't want to, if you're not a parent, but hang with me if you would. The first thing we need to do when we, like when we're thinking about, okay, I got to walk with wise people, how do I start this journey? Like, who am I looking for when I want to walk alongside somebody? And I thought, you know, we need to start with wisdom, first of all, making sure that we understand what wisdom really is. Solomon would say that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. Now, we know that, right? We know as church people, as religious people, hey, our relationship with God is most important. We would say that. The reason I brought this up, though, is because it's easy for us, especially adults, to equate success with wisdom. Because we see somebody who appears to be successful in their business. They appear to have a successful relationship. They're wealthy. Like, we see these things on the outside, but do they have a relationship with God or not? Because the advice that you get from somebody who has a relationship with God in the areas of relationship and vocation and finances is going to be a lot different than the advice that you get from somebody who is just successful. Like, you know, you see somebody who is wealthy and they don't have a relationship with God, the advice to you might be, hey man, here's how you work your way up in the company and become as successful as you can be in your job. We'd say, well, okay, success sounds good, right? Meanwhile, the advice from somebody who is pursuing a relationship with God may be, I know you have a great job, and if you stay in this company, you have a terrific future, but have you noticed that your wife is miserable because you're never home? It may be that you need to quit that job so that you can have the relationship that you need to have with your wife and kids. See, that's very different. The successful advice versus the wise advice is very different, but it's both pertaining to your vocation and your job. So the first thing we need to do is we need to make sure that we're looking at wise people, we're not just looking at successful people. I want to talk to parents for just a second. Again, this is one of those things that Stacy and I really pounded on when we raised our kids. And again, my kids can tell you this verse by heart, but it's not enough for them to know it. As parents, we have to engineer this for our kids. We tried really hard when our kids were tiny to find adults, especially parents, that were godly parents who had a strong relationship with God. And we just inserted our kids into their life, whether they wanted it or not. Hilary Pulley, Max Sisko, like, we just kind of said, hey, go to their house and play. You know, again, the law of averages says that the child of a Hilary Pulley or a Max Sisko, because they're godly parents, these are going to be godly kids. So these are the kinds of children that I want my kids to have lifelong relationships with. Long-term, lifelong relationships. And I can tell you that we've been blessed by that because of them and because of their kids. So, hey man, we did everything we could to take advantage of every minute we could that our kids were with their kids. But here's the other thing is we also wanted them to spend time with those adults because we all know this because we're all human and this is just the way we're made. Like, there's a time in a kid's development, maturity, when he hits, you know, 12, 13, 14 years old, suddenly you're an idiot. As a parent, like, you have nothing to say to your children. They know it all. They don't want to hear anything you have to say. But guess what? If there are other adults in your kids' lives who are wise, godly men and women who have already established a relationship with your kids, when your kids won't listen to you, they will listen to them. That's been a huge blessing in our lives because we knew, you know, when there was some kind of crisis or there was some kind of decision that needed to be made and they weren't going to listen to me, they were going to listen to Mac, or they were going to listen to Ken, or they were going to listen to Barry, because they already had a strong relationship with those adults in their lives. So first thing I would say to parents is, number one, make sure you find, early in your kids' lives, find godly adults and children that you can pair your kids with. The second thing I would say is, it is okay for you to tune out the kids that you don't want in your children's lives. That's perfectly acceptable. Like, there were kids, I think you know the Scotts well enough, that anybody's welcome at our house. But our kids aren't necessarily welcome at other people's houses sometimes. Like, we worked hard to tune some people out of our kids' lives because they were the Ross and Jims of the world. Like, there were times that I wish my parents had tuned some of those people out of my life. I can tell you that some of the regrets in my life, if not the biggest regrets in my life, came from hanging out and listening to the advice of boneheads like Ross and Jim. So don't feel bad when you tell your kid, you know what, I don't think it's a good idea for you to spend the night over at Lucy's house. But you can invite her over to your house. Right? There's the compromise. You invite them over so that you become the influence, they don't become the influence. Okay, enough said about that. I hope that there's enough said on that. Young people, teens, college, 20-something, let me encourage you at the stage of life that you're in, if you don't already have some of these wise, especially older adults in your life, that you start seeking them out. And I understand that this is uncomfortable sometimes for you to go and ask for advice and to try and find people that you know, kind of lay your life out there and let them walk alongside you. There are plenty of people here that would love to do that, but this is a thing in just human nature. We like to hang out with people who are like us. We just do. You know, we hang out with people who are the same age as us, the same socioeconomic status, the same color. Like, we just naturally gravitate to those people. So at this point in your life, you're making some pretty big decisions. I don't know, this is kind of an aside, but it was really interesting. The first time that Corbin met his great-grandfather, Pops. Corbin was, I don't know, 14 years old or so. Pops was 80-something years old at this point, but he's this big, tall fella, thin, still pretty athletic at 80 years old. He just had his teeth replaced because he fell playing basketball. Like, this is Pops. And he's never met Corbin before in his life. And like, just, you know, minutes after meeting Corbin, he comes up alongside him and he puts his arm around him and he says, "Son, the decisions that you make in the next couple of years are going to affect the rest of your life." I guarantee you, Corbin remembers that and took that to heart. Like, they had no really a relationship at all, but there was still that bond between them. But that's truth. You know, when you're in high school, in college, you're just out of college, like, these are the decisions that are going to affect the rest of your life. No pressure. So why would you take advice from people who have no more experience in life than you do? Like, when you're trying to make the decision, okay, where am I going to go to school? Am I going to go away to school? Am I going to stay here? What's the financial liability? Should I take on student loans, or should I try to pay for it myself? What's my major going to be? What do I want to do for the rest of my life? Should I quit dating him? Should I keep dating her? Should I pop the question? Should I break up? When you have to answer these big questions in life, I would encourage you to find somebody who's a little bit further down the road to get some advice from, rather than hanging out with the people who look just like you, who have no more experience than you do. And here's the thing, when it comes to this kind of stuff, it doesn't have to be somebody old and crusty like me. It just has to be somebody who's a couple of years ahead, somebody who's a little bit further down the road, who can look back and say, you know, that sounds like a good idea, but I tried that, and I just got to tell you, it didn't work out for me. So you might want to think twice before you make that decision. It should be pretty easy. Like, for our college folks, I'm sure that they would be happy to spend time with our high school folks and let them share those kind of experiences. Our young married folks, or young parents, would be glad to spend some of that time with our college folks. Last thing I just want to throw in here is old folks like me, old folks like a lot of us here. We still need wise people in our lives. There are still situations that we don't know how to navigate. I know for myself, the older I get, the less I know. Is that just me? Am I that thick? But it's like the world gets so much bigger the older you get. God is so much larger than the box that we've put him in. And I often find myself in a place where I just don't know what to do next. There's plenty of room for us still to find people who are a little bit further down the road to help us find the direction and walk alongside us. But here's another part of this, older folks, and that is we have been graced by God to live as long as that we have and to have the wisdom of the experience that God has given us. And it would be a shame if we hung out with each other and shared those experiences among ourselves rather than passing those down to the next generation. Solomon says, son, if you'll just listen to what I have to say, things will go so much better for you. We're in a position where we can take somebody aside, look around this room, and say, hey, you know what? What do you need from me? What can I help you with? And it's weird, I know, because when you get to a certain age, it's like, we're not cool anymore. We don't know how to talk to people who are younger than us. This is kind of scary. I don't know how to enter into that conversation. It's okay. You don't have to be cool. You just have to love people. Like, I know that my kids would listen to anything that Oscar and Charles told them. You know why? Because Oscar and Charles love my boys. And they already know that. And they could speak right into my son's lives, and I know my kids would hear that. You just got to love on people. When you love on people, it opens all kinds of doors so that you can have those kinds of conversations there. When we first started coming to Cordova Community Church, one of the values that led us to CCC was this value of being an intergenerational church. It was this idea, it was kind of like a family reunion. After all, we're a family, right? Aren't we a family? We're a family. And, you know, recently we've had two funerals that we've gone to. We've had some big birthdays. We've had some engagements. We've had all kinds of big things going on. I don't know what it looks like at your house, but, you know, when there's a big event like that and all the family gets together, every generation's in the same room. And they're laughing and they're talking and they're sharing stories and getting advice and listening to advice. You can listen to everything from diapers to Depends, from midlife crisis to menopause. It's like all in the same room going on at the same time. But we're all sharing that time with each other, learning from each other. That's what God has called us to as a family, isn't it? So I just want to encourage us, when we think about walking wisely, what do we have to offer? And what can we do to become wise people? We're going to have a prayer here in a second, and then we're going to have some more worship. We'll have, at least I'll be over here on the side. Gary, Danny, if you want to pick a side, if you've got any prayers that you would like for us to pray for this morning, this is a great time to do that. But let me encourage you also, like, if you want to open a conversation right now, that's fine. Like, walk up to somebody that you need some advice from, pull them over to the side, and let's start the conversation going. Because I know that there are people in here with needs, there are people in here with wants, there are people in here with confusion about what needs to happen next in their lives, and God has blessed us with a terrific group of people here to help in that.